Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.
Are you a business owner? This spring, amplify your business and support HRN's mission by becoming a business member. HRN is dedicated to spotlighting small businesses that keep our communities vibrant. With a $500 business membership, HRN can shine a light on your work and you can help sustain our mission to transform the way people think about food. As a thank you for this tax-deductible donation, your business will receive on-air mentions, social media posts, listings on our website, and more. You will also play an essential role in keeping nonprofit food radio on the air. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/biz to become a business member today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/biz.
My name is Courtney Shizzle Magrini. I'm the executive editor of 750 Daily and Beverage Media Group. And I'm joined here by three phenomenal growers today. And we're going to talk about Carignan. So I'd love for you to each introduce yourselves and your wineries.
Okay, so hello, everybody. My name is Ferran Lacruz, and I am a grower in Catalonia, in an area that is called Penedès, which is more or less located 50 kilometers south Barcelona. And well, it's basically known as the area of Cava, but sometimes we have this kind of bad reputation because Cava sometimes is known as this area of lots of bottles and lots of grapes, but we try to show that from these areas, it's also interesting to offer other views, to offer other intentions, and to try to enhance areas that maybe has had like a bad heritage. So our goal there is try to produce honest wines which we believe in, and yes, in 2018 we start with this idea, with this motivation, and trying to make these wines which were like representative of Penedès. And yeah, that's basically a bit and brief introduction to our goal.
Fantastic.
Hello. You want me? I'm France. I'm working very close to you. It's Catalonia Française. And we have Carignan is a very local grape. And it was nearly killed by the cooperative system. But happily, we keep it on very poor ground and just another vinification. And I come from another part of France, but I start in 26 in Roussillon area, and I buy old Carignan, very old, and I try to find a good expression. Thank you.
Wonderful.
William with two shepherds. I am from the Russian River Valley in Sonoma. This is our fourth raw New York and our 13th vintage. So we started as a little teeny winery making 175 cases. Today we're at about 4,000 I have to convert that to bottles, 48,000 bottles, to speak bilingually of these things, the liters and everything else. So we specialize in our own varieties, And in the case of the Carignan, it's not uncommon in California. We don't own the vineyard. We'll talk about more of this. We lease it. But we do grow two varieties on the small piece of property. I didn't come from a multi-generational wine family. I wasn't inherited any land. And land is about $200,000 an acre in California in Sonoma to plant. So just a little tiny bit.
Fantastic. So before we start pouring some wines today, I'd love to talk with you all a little bit about Carignan in general. You know, we're looking at two regions in which Carignan is fairly important locally, and one region in which it's kind of an anomaly. So tell us a little bit about how Carignan performs in the vineyard and then also in the cellar.
Cool. So in my case, firstly, I would like to introduce a bit the backgrounds of Carignan Blanc, because Carignan Blanc is a grape that it's nearly kind of lost. But it's funny because at the mid, like at the middle of the last century, so around 1950, I mean, it was registered that we were talking about almost 2 hectares in the world of Carignan Blanc. And nowadays we are basically talking about almost 200 hectares. So we can see that something happened. And basically this thing that happened, it's social economies. Grapes which were much more productive and grapes which were, let's say, much more resistant and easy to work in the vineyards were the ones which replaced all these Carignan Blanc hectares. So it happens in Carignan Blanc, but it happens in other grapes, but focusing on that one, it really happened this. So talking about Carignan and talking about my area, I have to say that nowadays Carignan Blanc is not really typic there, but it used to be, because of course we are talking about a Mediterranean grape. And before Phylloxera, it was spread out through the whole Mediterranean shore. Nowadays, it's basically focused on the south of France, also North Catalonia. But I thought that it could be a really interesting grape to plant in our region, basically because Penedès, every year is warmer and warmer. Every year it's raining more. It's raining the less. So it's kind of difficult to arrive at this really interesting ripeness point of good alcohol and good acidity, and also having a good phenolics, a good skin. So with sometimes with our local grapes, this is turning something a bit difficult. And I start looking for grapes which could have this skill of keeping good freshness, keeping good acidity, and having the skill to arrive at a good maturation point. And I notice and I hear about Carignan, and I start getting informed about this grape. And 8 years ago, we decided to plant this grape in our area. So how is this grape? It's basically a grape that when in a young stage is so productive, it's really productive. So somehow, if you want to achieve a quality wine of this grape, you need to balance the vineyard. You need to stop a bit the vineyards and make down a bit all these profits. So we planted in a really calcaric soil. Basically, in Penedès, our soils are argilocalcare. So we try to locate the parcel that we have that was much more calcare to stop a bit this plant and to slow down all this powerful that it's having. And then we also decide, at least at the moment, to work in a training system which is a double bouillotte. So it's a system that every year you need to construct the skeleton of the plant. So it's a way to stop all this vegetal force that the plant is having. So yes, this is how it's planned. And indeed it's working good. We're having low profits, but we also try to make a really good green pruning because it's so sensitive to all this humidity. In my area, even though it's not raining, people could think, wow, this is a place that it's not, it's easy to work the vineyards because it's not raining and we're not having really much humidity. But we do have, because we live 15 kilometers away from the Mediterranean Sea. So all the wind is coming and this wind is humid. So our percentage of humidity is, we talk about an 85% of humidity. And that's important, that's a lot. So when we have this humidity and we have warm, that's the festival for the fungus. So it's really like this. That's why we really try to have the vineyard ventilated, because this grape, I don't know if you have in mind the grape Macabo, which is so stuck, which is all the grapes are so together. So Macarignan Blanc, it's kind of the same. So we try to have it ventilated to let the grape be healthy and to let the grape be like develop and have a good ripening process. And then in winery, it is a really reductive grape, really reductive. So we work it in a way which is a macerated Carignan Blanc. So we, our idea always is to bring clean wines on the table. And we really try to be careful on the reductions, to not have a, like an endemic reduction in the wine. And yes, it's so reductive, but it's a grape that due to its acidity, it has a really, really big bottle potential. So we can enjoy it now, but I'm sure that if we drink wines from Carignan Blanc from all vintages, the wines will be so alive because it's so gentle and it's so cool to have the opportunity of working with this grape, because for me it's the way to keep on making like high quality wines in our areas which are warm.
Fantastic. I know that we talked a lot about Catalonia specifically. I'm going to start pouring your wine, if that's okay, while both of you talk a little bit more about how you approach Carignan in your vineyards. Does that work?
Yep.
Perfect.
Perfect.
Then.
Yes.
I can follow what you say, and in my place we are quite high place. It's quite dry and it's quite ventilated with a main north wind, but it is changing with the changing of the climate. And yes, it's important to have a very ventilated climate. I observe the all vines in Carignan. I use Carignan Noir. I will have some Carignan Blanc, but I use black Carignan. And all vines, we can have very old vines with Carignan. They are very adapted with our climate. And they were planted in the past and on square, very straight, as the horse can pass. And then we work a lot by hand. And the first enemy of vines is tractor, is engine, because we often hurt. And pruning is absolutely necessary to get fruit, but it's also a way to the contact with human and vegetables. The pruning, it makes fruit, it makes the verticality, and we can make prune as a bush, and it's a very good conduit de vigne to longevity. And we have a lot of very old vines in Carignan Noir, Carignan. And it is a pruning which allows some, during summer, some shadow and some light moving. And it makes it good for the vines and for the soil too. If you have a large bush with a shadow on the ground when it is very hot, very, very interesting for growing and for last, to have some vines last. And in my case, we have very poor soil. It's more acidic, it's more nice soil I have. It's a mix of metamorphic soil, very, very draining. And it makes, you have each foot of vines as an individual and makes its taste finally in all vines. And when we have an old parcel of wines, it's like an assemblage with all the vines. Then it's interesting to work by hand, and we can do it on some very old parcel. Then I have here, you test, I have a young Carignan and on the granite and old Carignan in nice soil. And you have two profiles very different.
Okay. Is it back on? All right. I've been lucky in that. And I started working with Carignan in 2013. I started in 2010 and I just lucked out. And it's actually somewhat the nature of the beast in California. So the vineyard that we leased, which we share with one other winery, is about 45 minutes north in Hopland, Mendocino, on the eastern side of Mendocino, which is an extreme hot Mediterranean climate. And the reality of Carignan in California is a similar story as in some of France and Spain, is that in the 70s we had over 28,000 acres or 11,000 hectares. Today we have 2,500 acres. So all of the Carignan that is left is primarily old vine. I've got some data. There's been maybe 12 acres in the last 2 years replanted, so nobody's putting back in Carignan. Frankly, Carignan is it's one of the most exciting varieties I work with. It immediately became, to get this vineyard, we had to agree to take half of a very large, and it was a very tiny winery at the time, so we learned to be very creative with Carignan. We make it three different ways. We're going to show you our carbonic expression today. It is the perfect grape for California. We should be ripping out Pinot Noir in half the places that it's planted and putting in Carignan. And I've had Pinot Noir growers come to the winery and buy Carignan and Vermentino, and I'm like, gee, having a little problem with the heat in your Pinot vineyard, are you? It's resilient. It's easy to grow. We'll probably talk about its history. You know, it was its own worst enemy when it's young vine. It's insanely vigorous, so it got this reputation in France and California as a trash wine. And the majority of those 28,000 acres was in the Central Coast, making jug wine. Probably wasn't even very good clones of Carignan. I haven't seen them, but they talk about the old days of Grenache in California, and Grenache berries the size of golf balls. So we didn't necessarily have the best clonal material 200 years ago. So it's a phenomenal grape, and I originally was not that in keen with it. It tends to be a grape that is can be very big and tannic and expressive, and that's the expressions I've had from all over. And I had a bottle from somebody from this vineyard that was a little bit lighter, which is just my personal palate. And I was like, wow, you can tame this beast. And so I've spent the last 8 years trying to tame the beast.
Nice. Well, we'll get to see how you tamed it in a little while. But let's talk about the wine in our glasses, since I'm sure if you haven't already, we're all dying to taste it. Fran, tell us a little bit about the origin of this wine. You told us a little bit already, but how long have you been making this wine?
Yeah, so this wine, it's the third year that I make it. Now you're tasting the third vintage that I make it, so the vintage 2020, if I'm not wrong. Yeah, exactly. So yes, here, the intention of this wine, I mean, sometimes when we talk about Carignan, the concept that it usually comes to our mind is something much more rustic, something a bit that it's not so gentle, it needs time to integrate everything. And yes, sometimes it's true because it's one of the characteristics of this grape, but here, my inspiration here was the fact of making a maceration wine, right? The first year I vinified this, it was in 2017, I vinified not as a macerated wine, I vinified just a little bit that I had as a normal wine, so a direct press. And the wine was good, the wine was interesting. But the next year I thought, why not doing it skin fermented? And now with experience I think that it's the key, because it's really enhancing all the things of the wine. Is enhancing the aromatics, is enhancing the mouth, is giving texture. So I think that this grape really deserves this. It's like bringing it at the next level. Here, focusing on that wine, just to explain a bit the vinification, and then if you want, we can talk about how this wine is and how it's behaving. So, which is my intention behind this wine, is basically trying to integrate this maceration, so make the maceration be part of the wine and not feeling that the tannins are going in a way and that the wine is going to another one. So basically trying to make a sublime and soft maceration. So I did, when I received the grapes, when we harvest them, we press the 50%, the other 50% was this stem, and we mix these both parts. So while the whole fermentation, which lasts for more or less 3 weeks, we were doing pichage every day. But when the fermentation was over, we decided to move the wine to another tank and keeping just 30% of the skins. And making a maceration, this vintage was 50 days with the skin. So by working with this little amount of skins, what do you gain? You basically gain, it's like cooking in low temperature. You cook everything, you cook all the food, but keeping all the aromas, keeping the food much more tasty, much more soft. So it was the same. It was kind of the same inspiration, making a really slow and really slow session of all the skin compounds to make the wine have balance. And then as this grape is so reductive, really reductive, so we decide to stop this maceration the moment that when we have the wine in glass and we move that and we feel that the reduction is too hard, this moment is when we say, okay, stop macerating, and we start the aging in amphoras, because the amphora is a vessel which is so open, the oxygen goes through so easily, and is opening up again the wine. And also it's making like rounder this acidity, making the wine much more gentle. So yes, it aged around 5 months in amphora, and then we just gave bottle to give calm. And well, I think it turned into a really gastronomic wine. It turns into a wine that it's showing a lot on the aromatics, but the mouth, I think that it's so structured, but it's not these hard tannins that sometimes are kind of a bit annoying. So here we just want to make a wine a bit gentle, a bit cool and interesting, and show this other phase of the Carignan and also of the white wine.
Mm-hmm. It's delicious. How did you first have the idea to work with Carignan Blanc, since it's not so typical?
It was basically because I was afraid that if we want to keep on making kind of high quality wines in my area, I was afraid that maybe Charello wouldn't have the skill of keeping the acidity and keeping and also being mature. So, I mean, maybe this is something crazy, but for us it's so difficult to have these levels of freshness with 12 or 12 and a half alcoholic degrees. Because if you go to these levels of 12 of alcohol with other grapes in our area, you've got non-acidity. So the wine won't be able to have bottle potential. So that was a bit the idea of going for Carignan, of trying to... It's basically always the goal of enhancing my area. And I think that this is a grape that it really fits well there, because it's so, so calcaric. We were basically down the sea, so our natural soil is so calcaric, and it's really fitting good. And even by being calcaric, you concentrate even more the grapes.
Absolutely. Are there any other growers in your area who have kind of seen what you've done with Carignan Blanc and are buying into the idea that it's a good grape for your area?
Yes, indeed. A few growers of the area, they tasted the wine and they asked me for wood. So I gave them wood, and I feel so happy of it, because I feel that it's a way of going all together for making a better area and for making a better Penedès. So yes, I think that soon new wines of this grape are going to come, and I hope someday Penedès would be also known for the Carignans, because it's Mediterranean, but Penedès is also a place for it.
Fantastic. Any questions about this wine from anyone here? We can also ask questions at the end, but I figured while it's in our glasses. Okay, cool. So William has gone on record to say that he would look for Carignan Gris over Carignan Blanc if he could, but right now we're looking at Carignan Noir, and we're looking at a carbonic Carignan. So tell us a little bit about the origin of this wine and why you approached it in this way, and I'll pour it for everyone else.
So we do Carignan now two ways. For a while we did rosé. When we first got Carignan, we went from 2 tons to working with about 5 to 10 tons. And at the first vintage, I just made 100% regular red Carignan, and I realized it was going to take us 2 years to sell it at this size. And so what else could we do with the grape? This was back in 2017. We were starting to see a lot of Nouveau and carbonic wines coming on the marketplace in California, and most of them were pretty horrible. So I bought a lot of them and talked to people, and I tried to figure out where they were going wrong. I'm not an expert on carbonic. And so we just did a science project that has turned into the most successful version of this. And the goal was, what I learned quickly was, the word carbonic is fairly widely misused. It's become a popular term, and wines that are whole cluster will refer to as carbonic. You can argue with me later if you want. We're not going to do it now, but it's not. So carbonic maceration is an environment where you remove all the oxygen and you force the fermentation to start strictly by the enzyme inside the grape. And so to do that, we're not a sophisticated winery. We don't ferment anything in tanks. So we take the grapes directly from the vineyard, don't destem them, which is important because you don't want juice, you want dry grapes. Lower them in a variety of small 1-ton variable capacity tanks, which are meant to hold juice, not grapes. Layer them with dry ice, and then gas the bottom. There's a valve at the bottom. We take argon, a heavy gas. Same thing when we do in sparge. When we bottle, we sparge. Push out all the oxygen, and these lids are completely sealable. Put a fermentation bung on them because they produce a tiny amount of CO2, but not very much. And then we don't touch it for 2.5 weeks. And I'm talking to my peers, like, oh, we open it up every day, and we pour juice over, and we do this, and we do that. And, like, it was really nail-biting as a winemaker to not open something for 2.5 weeks, right? It's against our instinct. Every day we want to taste and smell and touch. But that was the key. And when you open the tank up in 2.5 weeks, we finally got one VC that had a door. It didn't make any difference. You open the door. The clusters have not broken down whatsoever. They've all expanded. They look like they're pregnant. And so the beauty of it is you've got a sealed vessel, right, with no air, and you've got a ton of grapes, and they're basically sealed grape bubbles. And so all the juice is fermenting in 2.5 weeks, only about 15%. And so all the aromas and the esters that would usually be just blowing off and volatilizing in the air, they're all trapped in there. And so you get this original idea was going to pour our regular Carignan next to our Carbo because they're so different. The color's different. The flavors are different. And I think some of these more rustic varieties like Carignan, Zinfandel, Syrah do a better carbonic than, heaven forbid, the traditional Gamay Beaujolais. You're not getting that bubblegummy kind of flavor that you can get, depending on that, because you've kind of got a more rustic grape and you're releasing the really beautiful aromatics that Carignan can have. This is the least favorite wine to make at the winery. When it's done in 2.5 weeks, we open up the stainless steel tanks. The one that has a door doesn't work because the grapes are so intact. Like, usually when you open up a tank door and you ferment in, the grapes have turned to mush. So you open up the door and out comes a flood. So nothing falls out. So we basically spend the entire day bucketing out 5 tons of grapes in 5-gallon buckets, passing them out to the people, trying not to asphyxiate while we get them and load them into the press. Lorenzo, my assistant winemaker, hates Carbonic Carignan Day. But the result is one of our most widely loved, popular. It's a clear glass, chillable red. We don't mean for you to age it. Our regular Carignan, we bottle age 2 to 3 years before release. And it's been really fun.
I love this wine. This has been one of my favorite wines since I tried it 2 years ago. And it's named after your kitten, yes?
Yes,
Wiley.
We didn't talk about it, but we have a farm, or maybe I did, I can't remember, I've got long COVID. We have a farm with 17 animals, dogs, cats, animals, goats, and they all have their own various labels. And this has our first cat ever, Wiley. There's a little caricature of him on the back. So we have 2 indoor-outdoor kitties that kill all the gophers in my vineyard, so they get extra treats when they kill gophers.
So remind me, what was the first vintage of this wine again?
I started regular Carignan in 2013, but I didn't introduce Carbonic until 2018, and I just did 35 cases that year just to try. This is pretty common. Every year I make something new. I do about 17 wines a year, and so if it works great, we wrap up production. If it doesn't, we kill it. So we were doing about 300, 400 cases a year. As I was explaining earlier, we were hit. The North Coast had a 75% loss of Carignan in California. There was none to be found anywhere. These are all dry farmed old vine vineyards, and dry farming doesn't mean you don't need water. It just means you don't add water. So with the soil types here that are clay that don't hold soil as well, water as well, and the roots can't go down as far. It's the one issue that we have with this is Carignan's going to have to plant it in areas of more sandy soils and other places as well that have better water retention.
Have you seen more Carignan coming out of the North Coast or from Sonoma in general?
Nobody's planting anymore, but what is now that the natural wine movement has gone from a fad to mainstream, it's a very popular grape in this circle. And you know, in California, we have hundreds of new small wineries and winemakers because of Custom Crush, all making small tonnage lots, and everybody wants Carignan. Mm-hmm.
And why is it that Carignan has become so popular in these types of circles, like among the natural, organic, biodynamic set?
I think it's an easy grape to work with. It's one that, you know, its reputation for years was it was used for blending because it brought color to the table and acidity. So it is a grape that you can let ripen more. This vineyard, we can't get it past 21 Brix or 21% sugar, which is all I want anyway. But as it gets riper, unlike other varieties, it will retain its acidity as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually very valuable. I've used it in blending in with Grenache, Syrah, Mourvèdre before, which is kind of untraditional. But my best vintage of my blend was the year that I put some Carignan in it.
So the hard question, which do you prefer, the carbonic or the traditional Carignan that you make?
It depends on the vintage.
Okay. What about this vintage?
This vintage, I like the regular Carignan better, but which is funny because the public has actually liked this vintage of the Carbonic more than anyone I've ever made, and I like it. It's a little less crunchy this year, I like the crunchiness, but I think by far and away, this has been the most responsive to of any vintage we've made.
Fantastic.
But I got bad news for you. I make the wine, so it's going back to being crunchy.
Oh, nice. I like a crunchy wine, so it's good. Any questions from anyone here about this wine?
Eddie? Yeah, so you seal the bung into two weeks, and you press off, and it's just juice fermentation from now?
Yeah, so that's a good... I didn't finish, so I should clarify. So it only ferments in 2.5 weeks about 15%, which is one of the reasons why we don't die from CS2 asphyxiation when we're taking the grapes out. And so we press it off the skins... we bucket it out, load it in the press, press it off the skins, right back to the same stainless steel variable capacity tanks. This is the only wine I've made in 13 years, including rosé, that never sees any wood whatsoever. And for those pundits who don't believe in native yeast, which, trust me, in California, you're still a witch in half the state if you use native yeast. This is a grapes that went from a vineyard, sealed in a tank, to a press and back out. And in that 3 hours, 3 to 6 hours of ambient air is all it needs to finish native yeast and native malic. So it finishes both. So the whole it's a whole cluster pressed in. The juice is 80% sweet. It picks up native yeast ambitly in the winery. Our winery has never had any fermentations in it until we started the building in 2015. So we know we have a true native yeast. There's never been you get shot if you bring yeast packets into my winery.
No sourdough during the pandemic at your winery.
And so then we just... Carignan is the most sediment-heavy grape I've ever worked with, so we used to rack it twice, and we'd have a purple plug like this. So now we rack it typically 3 times, and it still will be pretty pretty chunky, but it's fine. It's yeast cells. It's B vitamins. It's good for you.
Any other questions? Yeah.
Argon is that, so we keep argon and nitrogen in the winery. Argon is the heaviest gas there is, so it does the best suppression. Let it blow for 5 minutes, then seal it. And in the event, it doesn't happen very often because it's usually not a good thing, but in the event one of the lids fails in the tank, we reseal it. But at that point, you only need air. That's usually going to ferment a lot more aggressively. One time that's why we do as many small tanks as we can. Also not to depress the berries because we don't want them to crush their own weight off. We want dry berries in there.
Any others?
Did you guys like it?
Very fruity. Yeah.
Hey. No, so we do 3-can sparkling wines, and this wine is the magic juice for, I'll take off my shirt later, I got the Bucking Luna. So we do a can sparkling red that has our baby donkey Luna kicking the Trump and the coronavirus in the face. And sorry if there's any Trumpies in here, but hey. And so the Bucking Luna, the secret sauce is this wine. So we retain some of that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Great. Well, thank you so much for sharing this with us. And now we're going over to Roussillon, or French Catalonia, as you called it. Will you tell us a little bit more about this wine and the creation of this wine?
Yes. Then here you have two reds, because I have not a lot of samples with me, bottles. Then we will have a young vines, 21. Yes, it's a direct... For the vat on granite soil. It's the vines are 12 years old, and more and more I try. I'm in a place, it's 500 meters high, and gives granite, and the altitude gives a very good freshness. And this year in 21, we have a good year. We can wait for harvest because the freshness, we have a big Icarus night and day temperature. And then the tannins has a good maturity. Then in this wine, we can make the, I try to make all the aging in concrete vat, concrete round. And it is, of course, very thick and very well closed, but it makes a breath, this type of a vat. It's very different than in stainless, for instance. Then it is infusion. The vines are destemmed, and it's only infusion, very simple. Thank you. Very simple vinification. It's great. We have I work on 10 hectares, and for all the domain, we don't fertilize, but only we plant some cereals, some plants between the vines to have more life, more insect, and to get the monoculture. All around the vines, we have a lot of garriga, oak tree, green, a lot around. So then I like to maintain most of natural environment around the vines, and we have some vintage are very simple, and in 21 we can work very freely. Just it's a grape, you know, it's a grape, just no extraction, very few intervention of the wine, and quite nothing. Yes.
Just, this is lovely. It's very fresh.
Very simple. Very. It is high, fresh. We have a north wind. Very, very. You know where is Roussillon situated? It's very south of France. Next, Catalonia, France. And with the altitude and the soil, we can have this freshness.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You work within cooler parts of Roussillon, yes?
Yes. The altitude makes a lot,
mm-hmm.
and the north wind too. Yes, it is. And as my colleague tell, Carignan have a good acidity, of course, really.
And this is a part of the world in which Carignan has been historically important, as well as now. Yes.
Yes, this is I place in our area. Before, there is vines only on the very slope, very slope. And we see, if you see the landscape, it's the old vines were on very, 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 my English is
like steep. Poor.
And now the vines, a moment, were everywhere, flat.
Mm-hmm.
But before, on the flat, there is animal cereals, it's where more mixed, and there is a cooperative system which put vines every flat place. Mm-hmm. This is a high plate, and there were no vines before a time. But now it is mixed. We have a lot of garrig, some vines, some cereals, some animals. You can do it more balanced, not only vines. In the
absolutely. Yeah, of course. How have attitudes around this grape variety changed in your region over time?
Sorry again.
How have the mentalities or the approach to Carignan changed in Roussillon over time?
The approach of Roussillon in the Roussillon or my domain?
In the region in general.
Yes.
Yeah.
With cooperative system, it was the worst because the plants with normally Carignan is very well on very cool soil and with a lot of rock, and you cannot attend big yield.
Mm-hmm.
It's very good to keep it a little people, and they have to find the water themselves with the roots.
Mm-hmm.
And the system with irrigation, etc., it's no sense, totally no sense. If you produce too much, you will have a very aqua wine, or a lot of sickness, you know. Yeah. And then we have some concentration, and also it is concentration, and your vine is able to find the water itself, and very resistant with dryness. Mm-hmm. Dryness, if we have, because in our place we can have hot, but it's not so crazy, but hot, dry.
Right.
And in the winter, cold too.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we have the two, yes. But
extremes.
And yes, if you have big yield, taste is not the same, and also the vine's not so strong.
Right.
Yes, to find the water, to find its fruit.
Right.
On fruit.
That makes sense.
Yes.
Shall I pour your second wine
oh,
here?
Yes, please.
Yes.
It's very different. The second is a 17. It is all vines here. All vines in nace soil. It was granite soil.
Would you like to tell us a little bit more about working with old vines for this?
These vines?
Yeah.
Yeah. Then in these bottles, the name is Franc-Tireur. It's a 17. You have old vines planted in the oldest place are planted in 19. And we have some in 1954 and some in 1978. And 17 was vintage, very rapid. Often we have, you know, the vines, we have the start buds, the bud start around the 1st of April in our area, about. And this year it's arrived 3 weeks ago. It's very, very, without the climate, totally changing, because we have some steps very, very precise. The buds, the flower, the veraison, and you have the vines change totally, and you have some stage, very important. And then it starts 3 weeks earlier than usual, and we have to run all the time after the vines. And it was very, very quick, and it was like a race. And finally, I harvest very, very early. Usually, all Carignan, I harvest around end of September, and in 17, I harvest very early. And now it is very long to open itself. I have some. It's not for me my favorite Franc-Tireur. Yes, all was very healthy, but we have yes, it is old Carignan, perhaps a little close yet, but yes, you have the normally it's very terroir wine.
Yeah, these wines are very different, as we can see. Do you think it will open up a bit more over time?
Sure. Sure. Perhaps it needs years more, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But the juice is clean too, fresh. Yes, it's quite full too, yes.
Absolutely. So I think we've seen several different styles of Carignan here, and we've talked a little bit about, you know, why especially natural and organic and biodynamic winemakers love Carignan. Do you think that we'll see more Carignan and a more varied style of Carignan in the future? Anyone can go, whoever would like to.
Well, I think that we will have that, basically, because we've got a global problem, which is the warming up, and I think that Carignan is a grip. I think that it's maybe what I will say, it's not making sense, but it's a grape made for this problem, because it's really having the skills for being adapted to this unfortunately actuality that we are having, because of, I mean, I think its rusticity makes bottle potential makes the skills that the grape has to age good. And also focusing on the one that I know, this acidity is a treasure that we have. And I think that Carignan will be important. It's important, but will be a bit more, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great point. Any other thoughts on the topic? Or Ferran summed it up well.
Yes.
Any questions from the group on both the Revai wines and on anything that we've tried today? Everyone's just so happy with tasting everything.
Carignan, for me, as I agree, it's also middle tannin. It's not very big tannin.
Right.
And the problem is I'm very white is so sublime, and he makes perhaps in 2, 5, or more years will be so sublime. Yours, and to have a carbonic Carignan is not very usual.
No.
and yours is so fresh. But we have some rusticity. It's more reductive, mm-hmm. and yes. We have to play on yes, but in our place we have it was in Italy they keep a lot of old grapes. Mm-hmm. In France the system, the cooperative system, not put out a lot of white grapes, mm-hmm. which have is good with also little yield and some condition, mm-hmm. And more people are interested in. And then we have a beautiful diversity. More. Again.
That's a great point. What is it about Carignan that makes it work so well with so many different styles? Obviously, all the wines we tried are very different today. Is it a matter of adapting to terroir, of being very flexible with the winemaking process?
I think in part it's because it is a grape that has retains its acidity as, mm-hmm. as it ripens, so it gives you a lot of tools right there. Like you couldn't make a fresh carbonic Carignan with a variety that had, I mean, this is 6.8 grams per liter acidity. That's quite high, but then the nature of the grape, the rustic nature, rounds it out and completes it. So it gives a winemaker a lot of tools. If you want to make a big extracted wine, and there are plenty of examples of that, you know, it'll give you that. If you want to make it fresh and bright, that's a 2017 that made that still as fresh as can be, and that's because of the acidity. It gives you so many tools. I think we're just starting to explore the possibilities. You don't see much Carignan Rosé, for example. It's another mm-hmm. another great example that I've dabbled with but hasn't been done. And then getting I've seen but don't have Carignan Gris in the Languedoc, which I'm obsessed with grayskin varieties. I want to get some. I don't have any. I have to come steal some.
So watch what he brings back in his carry-on the next time he flies over. You know?
Carry on.
Yeah. Anything else to add on anything that we've talked about today on why you love working with Carignan? Anything that everyone here should know?
For me, it's a real challenge because it's about rustic too. There is some rusticity, mm-hmm. but we can find some delicateness too, and it's our work to find this... Yes, this finesse. Yes, it is.
Great. Fantastic. Well, thank you, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you to our growers for sharing their wonderful wines. Drink more Carignan.
Yes, please.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please... join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.